Basketball fans, welcome to We The Rapscast on Dash Radio, part of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. New episodes air on Dash every Tuesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time and are available in podcast form on iTunes, Podcast Addict, Stitcher, and anywhere else you get your sweet, sweet podcast fixes. I am Dan Grant, at SlammandDannyG on Twitter, and with me, as always, is my delightful co-host, a good man who loves his mama, who loves Yeezus, the Kanye West album, and Canada too. He's free-falling right into free agency. It's at Rusty Pedal Bike, Russell Pedal. And finally, back to guests, joining us is the light pole legend himself, a man who knows the cap but mistrusts motorcycle helmets. It's Daniel Hackett. How are you doing, guys?
Doing great,
good,
man.
I'm doing good.
Thank you. I had to do the double callback because last time you guys got together, I wasn't here. And I really loved your falling down story, Daniel. So I've been referencing it whenever I can.
That's good. It's proving that you actually listen to the podcast when you aren't on it.
I listened to the end.
Just that one spot to make sure he told the story, because he held me to that. He said, make sure he tells the story.
Yeah, it was good. I know that's become a really nice segment for us, and yours is one of my favorites. So, Daniel, you also have the honor of being our first repeat guest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'll have to think of a second falling down story, I guess.
Well, if you can. Yeah, if you want to. I wasn't going to put you on the spot with that, but if you have another one. I have a story about telephone poles I can tell later. It kind of involves falling down and some threats of violence. So, comical threats of violence.
Delightful.
Delightful. Yeah, it should be good. So anyway, the reason, listeners, why we're having Daniel Hackett on today is he is a cap expert, a guru, if you will, and obviously Toronto Raptors fans, or most of the people listening to the show, I presume, are very excited about the Kyle Lowry re-signing for 3 years, $100 million. And Serge Ibaka re-signing for 3 years, $65 million. I think there's some incentives and things built into those deals. We can talk about those later. But all in all, pretty interesting numbers for both players. I think a little less term than most people were expecting. Daniel wrote a really great article on Raptors HQ today. I'd recommend everyone check it out. It's NBA Free Agency 2017, What Now for the Raptors? And that's kind of going to be the theme of this show. We're going to talk about, now that those two massive dominoes have fallen for Toronto, what's next? Where can they go? What do they need to do to go where they want to go? What should they do, etc.? So that's why he's here. Daniel, thoughts on kind of the things that I just said? First of all, let's talk about the two signings, the things that have happened. Daniel, how do you feel about the signings of Lowry and Ibaka?
Well, great. Yeah. It wasn't the direction I thought they were going to go. They really went for term, which yes. I was a little surprised by, because I was under the impression, or at least my thinking, was this team's going to compete for 2 to 3 years, and then it's going to suck, mm-hmm. probably, because Lowry will drop off eventually, and they don't really have a top-tier talent in the pipeline mm-hmm. to replace him. And they probably won't, because they won't keep getting really poor draft picks due to being such a good team. And my thinking was, well, give them the term, because who cares if we have an extra year or two of a very bad Kyle Lowry who's 35 and earning a huge amount of money when mm-hmm. you're losing anyway. Doesn't matter. So see if you can reduce the cap hit now. They kind of went the other way and said, we'll give you the cap hit, but we won't give you the term, which mm-hmm. I guess maybe they think the window is shorter than I do, or maybe they really want to be able to pivot really quickly once it closes. But still, the numbers came in way below what we thought before we saw what the market was. I was sure Lowry was getting $35 million a year, so 33 on a really short term is still a really good deal. And Ibaka, you know, he came in right around the numbers we thought, low 20s. But again, shorter term, so can't complain.
Yeah, for sure. Russell, thoughts, things to add?
Yeah, I think it's interesting that they got deals that lined them up perfectly with the end of DeRozan's contract. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think that the big thing here is, like, Hackett just made the point exactly, which is, you know, people were like, well, you don't want to be paying Lowry when he's 35 and all this money and stuff like that. It's like, if at that point you're still into a rebuild, it's fine to have players that are not playing up to a high level because, you know, you want to lose games anyway, whether we want to admit that or not. Mm-hmm. So I think that this was a low-risk move, asset management, and at the end of the day, the window is there. I mean, the East is getting worse and worse. yeah, they're still not competing with LeBron with this roster. They basically brought back the same roster with a little less. But I think at the end of the day, what we've gone through with this team and what you've seen happen, I'm not ready for another rebuild. I don't think it's time, and I don't think they were well set up for it. Like, if you pivot now, you still got DeRozan under contract. You still got Carroll. You still got Valanciunas. There are a lot of moves you have to make. You don't have a top pick this year, so you have to wait another year and work towards that. And then you've only got one pick, and you know, you're looking at a 4 or 5 year process, and it's just things don't line up. Now, after 3 years, if you look at it and you know your three biggest contracts come off the books at the same time, then all of a sudden, if you're ready to pivot into something, into a rebuild, seems like the perfect time to do it. So, and you've still got young guys on the roster that need the time to develop and that are going to have shown real potential. So I just think it's all around, it's a great move.
Yeah, I think that it makes a lot of sense. And I think you've seen it as kind of a trend through free agency. Not a lot of guys are getting the 5 year deals. There's a lot of shorter 2 and 3 and even 1 year deals. We'll talk about some of those later. But I think with the way the cap has changed, the way that players on max, you know, the max deals can make 35% of the cap now as opposed to 30% before. And also all the money that was spent last summer where teams went crazy when they had the cap jump up. And, you know, you saw Evan Turner and Alan Crabb and Jan Mahimny and all these guys getting massive deals that are not max deals, but are significant numbers. I think that's really kind of affected how teams are structuring their contracts this year, because they either don't have the money to spend because they spent it last year, or they're wary about committing so much into the future. Like you said, it's really great that Toronto can have all three of those deals come off at the same time. And if we're going to talk about this later, but Jonas Valanciunas and Demari Carroll are fourth and fifth on that list, and they may not be long for the team either. So right now, those are the top five guys under your salary, and they could be gone within the next 2 or 3 years. It gives you so much flexibility, as Hackett mentioned, being able to pivot, I think, is such an advantage to have that kind of flexibility. Kyle Lowry, if he's great, great. And if the team's contending, great. But that number that he's at is very movable if you need to move him, which sounds crazy because it's such a high number. But the way the contracts are structured in the NBA right now, that number is not what we kind of think of it as, if that makes sense. Yes? No?
Yeah, oh. Yeah. Totally.
Okay, yeah, all right.
Throw to one of us.
Yeah, okay.
That makes sense. The cap now is right about $100 million.
Yes.
You go back just 3 years, it's in the high 60s.
Yeah.
So you've seen literally a 50% increase in cap. So this $33 million a year deal that he's on now would be a $20 million a year deal a while ago. And just 3 years ago. And that $20 million a year, that was all over the league.
Yes.
3 years ago. This is not an uncommon contract. This is what guys who are veterans and make the max get. It's just, it's the way it's always been. It just looks like a bigger number because we have so much more money flying around.
Yeah, for sure. I had said that, or wondered that aloud. I think it was on Twitter. It might have been on this show about whether with this new, we saw Steph Curry obviously signed the max, the 5 year, $201 million deal. With the number being that big now, how many guys would actually be able getting a true max anymore? And I think you're seeing that it's not really happening as much as people would have thought. I think maybe those guys in the lower tier on their second contracts, or the third contract, excuse me, are getting the 5 year 140. I think it's 140 or 145. Are getting that a little bit more, but those super veteran guys are not going to be getting those. You know, I think in Curry's last year of his deal, he's getting paid something like $45 million, which is unbelievable. Especially if the cap flattens out now over the next few years, which I think it's supposed to. Or it's going to increase more modestly anyway. It's going to be kind of difficult to tie up that much of your franchise in one guy. But a contract like Lowry's or even Ibaka's, which is at a really reasonable number, those are more movable than what we would have thought in the past.
I think a big thing with Lowry too is a thing that's getting lost in all this, because there's so much worry about the future and what he's going to be in a few years because of the way point guards generally age. But we can't sleep on the fact that, you know, as a 31-year-old right now, he just had the best season of his career. He averaged career highs in points, assists, and rebounds, three-point percentage, PER, win shares per 48 minutes. Like, if it weren't for that injury and the subsequent surgery, he would have almost certainly been in all-NBA talk. Like, he was having a career year. And it's not like this year is a big drop off. Like this year, he's worth that much money. And
yeah,
with only a 3-year thing, you could very well imagine that maybe next year he'll also still be worth that much money, especially once the, mm-hmm. you know, if the contracts are a little bit bigger next year, because this year there seemed to be a bit of course correction for like the insane contracts last year, right?
Yes.
So
yeah, totally.
I think it's gonna work out okay. I feel really good about this for the Raptors. Just because I love Lowry. He's one of my favorite Raptors ever, and I think that if you read his Players Tribune thing, and he refers to Toronto as home so many times, like doesn't even mm-hmm. mention where he's actually from in the piece that I can recall. Mm-hmm. You know, it's obvious that he cares about being here as much as you know there were reports that he didn't, and although he refuted those, at the end of the day, he made it very clear his thoughts, and we don't have to quote sources or anything like that. He told us straight up, and you know the action of signing the contract speaks even louder. So now you've got both DeRozan and Lowry, who had a chance to leave twice, and both times just chose to stay with the Raptors. So you know you're building a culture of players that teams want, or sorry, that mm-hmm. Of players that other teams want, right? And mm-hmm. It's good, and they want to be here, and I think that's a very good sign going forward. I hope that and Ibaka too. Like Ibaka, they traded for half a season of Ibaka. He could have very well been a rental, and he's still a serviceable player. People will talk about him having fallen off, but at the end of the day, he's still a great third banana. You know, so I'm really happy to have him back too.
I was surprised that all the talk was about how Kyle Lowry is overpaid, but when you really look at it, like Kyle Lowry is much more worth his deal than Serge Ibaka. Has been. Serge Ibaka is on a fairly hard decline. A nice bounce back here, but he's nowhere close to touching what he once was in terms of value, depending on the measure that you use. And all the big criticisms of Lowry are, oh, if you want to make that much money, you should show up in the playoffs, and you should be able to shoot in the playoffs. And I mean, like, I don't know if anybody watched these playoffs, but Serge Ibaka couldn't hit anything from beyond the three-point arc in the playoffs after shooting well over 40% with the Raptors for the season. So I found it a little odd, a little jarring, the criticisms that have been going around, just because Serge Ibaka, by every measure, basically, is roughly a league-average player. Mm-hmm. He's a huge boon to the Raptors because they haven't had a league-average power forward on the team since Chris Bosh. But and he can have an impact in that role, but he's not a star player, really.
No, certainly not.
I think he still has that reputation, right? Because he was a star player, and I think a lot of Toronto fans, he's still so new to the team. He's only been on the team for what, like 20 games and then plus the playoffs, so people maybe have not quite seen him as he is as opposed to what he used to be.
Yeah, and I mean, in today's climate, too, I mean, you got to keep in mind, like, he's making basically J.J. Redick money per season.
Yeah.
That's less. And
that's
reasonable. I mean, I know Redick's contract's a bit high given the fact that, you know, the 76ers had money to spend. But that said, it's not a crazy contract. Funny enough, it's, like, close to Durant money, but we can get into that later.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so, Daniel, what I wanted to talk to you about now, since we've talked about these contracts, we agree that we like them, they make sense, it's given the Raptors some flexibility, is the here and now, which is it's kind of gotten them in a potential tax crunch. Well, not potential, it's there right now. It's something they need to deal with. I'm looking at your article right in front of me just so I can get the numbers correct. All the salaries they currently have committed is there's 14 players. For a total of $131,953,191, and the cap is set at $99,093,000, which means that they're well over the cap, well into the potential luxury tax. Could you kind of take, I'm somewhat familiar with this stuff, and I know Russell is too, but could you kind of take the listeners through what that means and when these kind of penalties go into effect?
Sure. So, salary cap 101, the NBA uses a soft cap system. Unlike the NHL, teams are allowed to go over the cap. The cap is sort of it's not really a cap. It's there as a guideline. It does determine exactly how much cap room you have to spend on other teams' free agents, but you have a bunch of things called exceptions that let you go above the cap. And one of those is the your free agent exception, and they can come in the form of bird rights for players you've had for at least 3 years, or didn't leave their teams via free agency for the last 3 years. So you can trade for a player and get their bird rights. And that allows you to basically pay those players as much as they want up to their maximum salary for up to a 5-year deal, even if you don't have cap room, completely ignoring the cap. And that's essentially what the Raptors have done here. They've re-signed Lowry and they've re-signed Serge Ibaka to 3-year deals, significantly above what they were making last year, and with no cap space whatsoever to work with. So now they end up way above the cap. But to prevent teams from just constantly getting low-salary players and paying them a whole bunch of money to go over the cap and keep all these, in theory, super teams together, the NBA has a tax system where if you get to a point, this season is about $20 million above the cap, they start to charge an extra fee for every dollar you spend. And it gets worse and worse as you go on. It's like a tax bracket when you go to pay your taxes at the end of the year as a regular schmuck. The more you make, the more you pay. So the higher into this tax that you go, the more the NBA fines teams, as it were, with a tax payment. So in this case, the Raptors are about $14 million over the tax
line
right now. So the brackets are every $5 million it increases. So the first $5 million of over the tax, you're paying $1.50 for every dollar you spend. So there's the $5 million in salaries that you're actually paying the guy, and then you get charged $7.5 million for doing so.
Right.
And the next $5 million, it's $1.75 is the rate. So you get charged just over $8 million for that $5 million. And then they have an extra $4 million. And at that point, the rate goes up to $2.50 per dollar.
Wow.
So it goes up very fast once you get up to these points.
And again,
that's
additional, right? Like people, like if you're making if your player's making $5 million, and you say that, you know, in this case, you're spending $7.5 million. That's on top of the $5 million salary, right?
Yes, that's the fine. That's basically the extra money the NBA takes is the $7.5 million. You still have to pay your player, which is the $5 million. So anyway, the extra $4 million they have at this 250 rate would be another $10 million in tax. So I mean, their tax bill adds up to about $27 million extra dollars.
Yikes.
For being $14 million over the cap. So roughly a 2-to-1 ratio when you take it all into account right now.
Yeah.
But right now the problem is because they're already up at that high ratio.
Mm-hmm.
If they add more money, like if they wanted to go use the taxpayer's mid-level exception, get another $5 million player. That's going to cost them $15 million in taxes. It becomes very difficult to spend money because you're getting low-quality players with a very small actual salary who would go elsewhere if they could make more, and you're paying a huge amount for them.
Right.
For example, if they wanted to bring back Patrick Patterson right now to fill what is starting to look like what might be a hole at power forward somehow, it would cost them a lot of money. A lot of money. And
right,
that's the idea of the tax.
If they don't do anything else,
Sure. That's
right.
What we're going to get into is you're going to have to shed some salary if they want to add stuff. Because the idea of this tax is to make it so difficult for teams to add money at this stage that you can't just keep adding talent to a team. You got to pick what you want to spend on. It's not quite as hard line as a hard cap, but it gets to be to the point where it's just not feasible for a franchise to spend that much money.
Yeah, for sure. And that's the one thing. I've seen that on Twitter, and I've seen it in a lot of commenter and boards, etc. People saying, well, MLSC makes a ton of money. Why don't they just pay it? And I think it's because, as you said, it's such a punitive tax that it doesn't make sense. You said that right now that if they just started the season as is, they'd have a $27 million tax bill. Well, that's DeMar DeRozan's salary, right?
Yeah.
So it's while they do make a ton of money, and yes, they're a rich company, there's obviously going to be a guideline you have to operate within. And teams, you'll see, will pay the tax once in a while if they have to. I think Cleveland and Golden State were the only two that paid it this year. Is that correct? Maybe?
Might be. I think there's more than that, actually.
Oh, was there? Okay. But I know Cleveland went deep into it. I think they'd have to hire
it. You're right. It was very difficult this year to get into the tax because of that giant cap jump.
Yes.
That was the main trick.
Right.
The Raptors managed to come close. We were only a few million short.
Yes.
But,
yeah.
But yeah, it wasn't very common this year. In other years, it's been more common just because teams start a lot closer to the tax than they did last year.
Yeah, and the other point that I wanted to say that is people will say, well, why don't they just pay the tax every year? And it's because there is the repeater tax. Could you explain what that is?
Yeah, so even if, so let's say your owners, they, you know, they have the cojones to say, yeah, we're going to spend $160, $170 million total this mm-hmm. year. We're going to take a big loss, and we're just going to go win ourselves a championship.
Yeah.
And they take a couple shots at that, and they fall a little short. If you keep rolling back that expensive group or keep adding guys and you stay above the tax mm-hmm. for 3 out of 4 years, that's the line they use is, if you've been in the tax for 3 out of the last 4 years, then we're going to add an extra dollar in tax for every one of those tax brackets.
Right.
So if you're, say, $15 million over the tax right now, and you've got a $30 million tax bill, suddenly it's a $45 million tax bill instead. Yeah. So they just basically just say, you want to keep spending? Okay, we'll take even more of your money and make it that much more difficult for this to make sense.
Right, and that's one of the things I think that staying below the tax, if you can, is it makes a lot of sense, you know, if you're planning for the future where maybe there is a year where you want to take a shot and add a player and go into that tax, but you don't want to do it all the time and you don't want to do it casually, because then when you might get to yourself into a situation where it's like, okay, we're this piece away from, you know, making a conference finals or a finals, but we can't do it because if we do, we're going to get smoked with this tax bill and the ownership just won't pony up.
Yeah, so, and that actually applies directly to the Raptors right now.
Mm-hmm.
They, if you assume they have this 3-year window,
yes,
right. This year, if they go into the tax, and then next year they go into the tax, presumably because they have to re-sign Norman Powell.
Yep.
Then in that third year, if they're going to be heavily into the tax, they're hitting repeater rates.
Yeah.
And that will be very, very difficult to keep that group together for that third year of the window. So if they conduct the tax this year, then they're clear for the rest of this window in terms of the repeater tax.
Right. So
it really opens up options.
Right. So that's obviously going to be their goal. Everyone, I think, has heard rumors of Jonas Valanciunas since the draft day. Russell and I talked about that last week, that he was shopped potentially with the number 23 pick attached. Who knows for what? I don't think they're going to give him away, but they're trying to shed his salary. So, Daniel, you mentioned that the Raptors are, what, about 14, 15 million over right now?
Yeah, about 14 million.
About 14 million over, okay. So, Russell, Jonas Valanciunas is on the books for about 15.4 million next year. Damari Carroll's at 14.8 million. Who of the two of those, which guy do you think is the most likely to move? And who would you like to see moved if you had your choice?
Okay. I would say that given the fact that the typical answer in this would probably be Valanciunas just because of his age.
Mm-hmm.
However, in today's NBA, his skill set is becoming a little bit obsolete.
Yes.
Whereas Damari Carroll, although that he's had a couple injury-ridden seasons that have not been up to, he's not lived up to the contract that he was given, you could potentially sell a bounce back for him because he kind of fits well in the modern NBA in that he's a, you know, 3-and-D, supposedly, like when he's on, a 3-and-D combo forward who can play, you know, in small lineups at the 4 if need be. So I have a feeling that you could almost sell him a little bit more easily than Valanciunas, in fact. And in the meantime, what I would like to see is I'd like to see the Raptors keep Valanciunas, because now the loss of P.J. Tucker makes this a little bit harder with him going to the Rockets, because I would have been perfectly fine with Damari Carroll being traded if we were keeping Tucker. But now that we're not going to have Tucker, it leaves a little bit of a hole in that area where you're looking at guys like Bruno or maybe OG to step up right away. So that's what makes it a little challenging. But also I've said this a lot on this show, in that I still really like Valanciunas. I think he's a very efficient big man on offense. I like that he gives a different look. I do kind of like what teams like Milwaukee have been doing the last few years of bringing a guy like that off the bench, like in Greg Monroe, who can kind of beat up second units on the block. So
yep.
I think that I could see Valanciunas kind of slipping into that role, and maybe a guy like maybe where you use Ibaka at the 5, but this is where the re-signing of Patterson comes in. So, you know, then you're trying to shed even more salary at that point, depending on what figure you could get him back for. I think a lot hinges on that before I could really make that decision. But
yes.
If I had to choose one to go, I certainly would want Carroll to go first, despite the fact that Valanciunas' skill set is certainly something that's not as coveted in the NBA as it once was.
Yeah, and I think that makes sense. What you just said, I agree with most of what you just said, Russell. I think that also the reason I didn't really clarify this properly before I threw to that. The reason I was looking at those two salaries specifically is because the numbers that were there would get the Raptors below the tax. It would get them low enough that they wouldn't have to go into the tax if you just shed either of those players. But another player that's been talked about is Corey Joseph with a $7.6 million salary. Obviously, the Raptors have Fred VanVleet and DeLon Wright behind him playing the same position. So he's kind of makes sense in terms of roster building that you don't really need four point guards. Considering you just paid $100 million. Now, Hackett, I was going to ask you something that you mentioned earlier, was the taxpayer mid-level exception. Could you kind of go into what the mid-level exception is and how getting below the tax would also be advantageous to the Raptors and how it would affect that? Because maybe that's something they could use on Patrick Patterson, as was Russell was just talking about bringing him back.
Yeah, well, the mid-level exception is one of those exceptions that lets you go over the cap, basically. Mm-hmm. So in theory, the cap in the NBA is actually a hard cap, but there's exceptions to it, which makes it obviously a soft cap. But this is one of those exceptions, and there's actually, I think, three or four different versions of it, depending on how you look at it.
Yeah.
And basically the idea is a mid-level exception is supposed to allow you to provide roughly a league average salary to a free agent, even if you're over the cap. You can go out in the league and you can grab an average player to add to your team, in theory. Now, in more recent iterations of the CBA, they've decided that they really want to penalize tax teams more.
Right.
They want to stop them from having quite as many advantages and really restrict what they can do. So they've said, okay, well, if you're going to be a tax team, you get a smaller version of the mid-level exception. It's not going to be the league average salary. It's going to be a little below that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the non-taxpayer mid-level exception, which is the average salary. There's the taxpayer mid-level exception, which this year is about $5 million versus the $8 million average salary.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also one, if you happen to use this one, I happen to think is kind of silly, but if you use cap space, they'll give you another little exception you can use, whereas once you use your cap space up, you can go sign somebody for about $3 million.
Okay.
With the room. It's called the room mid-level exception because you use cap room.
I see.
But that's kind of irrelevant to this conversation. Mostly we're looking at the full mid-level exception and mm-hmm. the taxpayer's mid-level exception. If you use the full mid-level exception,
mm-hmm.
What happens is it triggers a hard cap at a point called the apron, which is this year $6 million above the tax. Initially, the thought was it would be the tax. If you go over the tax, you can't use the full
mid-level. Yeah, that's what I thought it was. So,
but they decided in negotiations that that was too much of a cliff for teams, where already once you hit the tax, you don't get a piece of the. Like, what happens when you pay the tax is it gets shared around to all the teams that don't pay the tax.
Right.
That's where that money goes. Well, a good chunk of it anyway. And you lose that as soon as you pay a penny of tax. Also, the trade rules change. You're more limited in terms of what trades you can make.
Mm-hmm.
And they decided that this mid-level exception changing at the tax line was just too many things right there. So they moved it $6 million up.
Okay.
So it's at a point called the apron. And the idea is if you use the full mid-level exception all year, you're not allowed to go over this apron point. It actually becomes a functional hard cap.
No exceptions. Okay.
Can't go past it.
Right.
Now, this year, that point is $125 million. So if you look at the Raptors' current salary commitment of $132 million, that's a problem for them. So they obviously can't use that full mid-level exception because they're already well past the point where they'd be hard capped.
Right.
So they'll be stuck using the taxpayer's mid-level exception, unless, of course, as we're mentioning, they can lose some money off the roster and mm-hmm. get down to a point where it makes sense to use that full mid-level exception again.
Right. In terms of the mid-level, it's the most you can use it for is a three-year contract. Is that correct?
You can do a four-year.
A four-year. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
For the, I think the taxpayer might be shorter.
Right.
At 3 years, but the full one is a full four-year deal. You might remember Jason Capono being signed with the mid-level exception for four years.
I very much do. I think it was
and then suffering through 4 years of Jason Capono.
I think it was about 10 years ago tomorrow, because tomorrow is July 4th, which is one of my best friend's birthdays, mm-hmm. and we were up.
Is your best friend America?
No, it isn't. Russell. No, but my best friend is, one of my best friends, his name is Dave Mitchell. Dave, if you're listening, happy birthday, because this will come out on your birthday. When we were up at his cottage, we used to go there every Canada Day long weekend, which usually had July 4th in there somewhere. And I remember hearing that they had signed Capono and being really happy because I thought they needed a shooter. And I think he had won the three-point contest the year prior. And obviously that turned out to be ill-gotten happiness. Anyway,
he won another three-point contest.
He did. He did.
He did. Great. The only three-point shots I saw him hit in Toronto.
Burn.
A really good Jason Capono story that I heard, and I can't remember who told it, but Zydrunas Ilgauskas used to talk about his rookie year in Cleveland, and he had gotten, obviously, a lot of money. He was in the NBA, and I'm pretty sure he was a first-round pick. And they used to go out for dinner, and he'd look at he'd look at the menu and see the prices, and then he'd go to Subway across the street and get a sub and bring it back and eat it in the restaurant because he was not, I guess he came from like fairly like a modest upbringing and was just like, I can't pay $100 for a steak. I can't pay whatever for a steak. So he would eat his turkey sub as they all ate NBA player monster dinners, which is kind of endearing, except for all the, you know, the wasted money that the Raptors spent on him for 4 years. But anyway, we don't need to talk about Jason Capono. We got sidetracked. Daniel, thank you. Yeah, it's all right, Hackett. Thank you so much for that explanation of the mid-level. I think that makes a lot of sense. So basically what we're saying is that the Raptors can get below the tax. They can use a higher mid-level exception, which might be more enticing to a free agent like Patrick Patterson.
On that note, Patrick Patterson,
yes.
We have his bird rights.
Yes.
We don't need to use any exception. We can sign him to whatever he wants.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Unfortunately, we still do have to pay the tax, so we can't sign him to whatever he wants. But we don't need to worry about that mid-level exception for Patrick Patterson. Now, if we do end up moving on from Carroll instead of Valanciunas and we have to sign a wing, that's where the mid-level exception is really going to come into play.
Right, okay. Okay, okay. Okay, so, all right. So, I think I asked you this the other day on Twitter, actually. Would it be possible to just use that exception? But I guess not. Because it wouldn't matter because it would still count towards the bill, right? You can't even use it on your own player because it wouldn't affect anything. There's no point.
It doesn't help you any. No, it. Right. You can.
Yeah, yeah, but it would just be. You'd just be wasting.
It wouldn't. Wouldn't help.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay. Well, this stuff is complicated. I can see why people get confused. I know. I find myself, trying to correct when I see people making ill-gotten assumptions and whatever, and you know. Twitter and Facebook or whatever, but it's really easy to see why people get confused about how all this stuff works. And that's why we have you here, Hackett. Now, I'm looking at your article here. Now you're talking about shedding salary. Now we talked about moving out Valanciunas, talking about moving out Carroll. Hackett, do you have any idea about which guy you'd rather lose at this point? I asked Russell before. I'll ask you the same question. Which guy do you think it makes more sense to move? Does it make more sense to move one of them and Joseph? What about, we could move all three of them. What would you like to see happen?
Yeah, before I get to what I want to happen, because I'm an unabashed Valanciunas fan, so it's pretty obvious that I don't want him to go.
Okay.
But I take a totally different look at it from what Russ did. He's looking at what teams might actually want out of these guys. I'm looking at the way free agency is going and the league in general, and I don't think any team's going to actually want either of these guys.
No.
I don't think there's value. I'd be pleased if Masai somehow managed to get a first-round pick or something for one of them.
It wouldn't be the first time that he moved something we didn't think he could move.
Agreed. This is why I can't write it off as a possibility. But I'm having a hard time seeing where either of them lands, where a team will even take them for free and won't ask for something in exchange. So looking at it from that perspective, leaving aside their value as a player, DeMarre Carroll makes less than Valanciunas by about $1 million. It's not a lot, but it's less. And he has exactly 2 years left on his deal. Well, Valanciunas has 2 years plus one, a player option. And if a team is going to grab a guy and hope that he works out, they don't really want that player option to be there because he's going to opt out if he works out. And if he doesn't work out, suddenly they're stuck with 3 years of Valanciunas sitting on their books.
Yeah.
And judging by the way free agency is going for big men and the trade market is going for big men, he's very likely to opt into that third year right now. So I think that you're going to be paying assets to move either one of them. So my big hope is that you can move Corey Joseph, who should have value, get a couple of seconds or maybe a protected first back, and then use that. Turn around and use that as grease to move one of these other big contracts.
Yeah.
And the upside of moving one big contract and Joseph is you get far enough below the tax that you can use the full mid-level exception and not be in danger of hitting that apron, that hard cap that you'd initiate by doing that.
Okay. So it looks like, yeah, it would make sense for them to move Joseph, which we talked about, just given the glut of point guards on the roster, plus one of those guys. Russell, you mentioned earlier, obviously, with Tucker not coming back. I thought Carroll, I mean, he's obviously struggled so much, and we had high expectations when he got here. But if there was a guy you were going to take a chance on, if he wasn't making quite so much money, Damari Carroll would be a guy that I think you would take a shot on, because he had, obviously, a great track record with the Hawks. He's been injured. Knee injuries are usually two-year things. He's not old by any means. He's like 30. I think he's 31 or 32 at the oldest. It's not like he's totally washed, or he necessarily is totally washed. He could be a guy who has a bounce back year. And Russell, you mentioned selling that. I think keeping him on the roster, and if that happens, maybe trading him mid-season would be something that you could try. Russell, what do you think about that?
That's not a bad idea. I have a question for Dan about that. At what point do you have to pony up for the tax thing? Is it like
it's the end of the year, right?
End of the year.
Yeah, it's the very last day of the regular season.
So you've got the whole season. So you've got the whole season to figure it out, or up until the trade deadline, we should say.
Basically, the trade deadline you got to have it figured out by. But here's the trick: in the off season, and you want to shed salary, there's a lot of teams with cap space, a lot of money sitting around where teams are seeing players go off the board, and they decide, hey, we'll use this cap space for something useful. But if they don't have somebody trade into them, they're going to do stuff like, say, Philly did with Redick and give him a giant contract for 1 year. They're going to find some player, dramatically overpay them for a year, just so they have that contract on the books, get some value out of it, and then they're back with their cap space again next year. But at the trade deadline, they won't have that cap space because they've gone and spent it in the summer. So the number of teams that you can shop players around to try to sell them on a salary-shedding move goes way down in season.
Okay, so it's more something you want to do now.
And second, teams can look at you and say, 2 months from now, you're going to be paying a giant tax bill. So, I mean, we're doing you a real big favor taking this salary. So I don't, you know, give us three of your next four draft picks for this to happen.
Yeah, or whatever. Right. Yeah, they can.
The leverage goes the entire opposite direction. Whereas right now, the team can say, we kind of want to shed some salary. And I see five or six teams with $30 million in salary they don't look like they're going to spend. I can shop around, see who's going to take them for the lowest price.
Yeah. I think the other thing is, too, if they don't get below the bill before free agency ends, then they can't use the mid-level at all. Is that right?
The mid-levels, they can use. They can use free agency never really ends. The mid-level actually stays exactly the same up until January 15th. So you can use the full thing right up until then, and then it starts to prorate down.
Of course, then it's slim pickings based on what you can actually get at that point.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so you're looking at waived players.
Okay, so that's really interesting. So in theory, they could give someone the full mid-level now and then try to get below the tax later?
In theory, they could... Well, no, they couldn't do that now because they're over the hard cap.
Right. Okay. So they'd have to give the smaller, the taxpayer mid-level that you mentioned.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. Okay. All right. So I was.
But they could definitely spend on a guy like Patterson and go way over the cap, over the tax, and try to get lower later. It just, I think, would be a really, really bad idea.
Yeah, it's super risky. Because then, as you said, teams know you're going to be kind of over a barrel, and they're going to ask for whatever they're going to ask for, and you might have to pay it. Okay, that's interesting. So, does anyone have any ideas for a landing spot for Valanciunas or for Carroll? I was looking at a few different ones. I noticed that earlier today, Phoenix waived Leandro Barbosa and Hackett. When we wrote our piece, our series of pieces back in Raptors HQ back before at the end of the season, or kind of before, I don't remember exactly when they came out. I think it was at the end of the season, talking about the different things that could happen in the offseason for the Raptors. You had mentioned a trade with Phoenix. Did that spark your interest again in that?
Oh, yeah. Well, they're one of the teams out there that's shopping cap space for assets.
Yes, for sure.
They don't look like they're going to go and try and sign a big-name free agent. So they are definitely one of the teams I'd be talking to. Them, Brooklyn, are the two obvious ones. The Lakers actually have a decent chunk of cap space still. that they may or may not use on George Hill, but if he decides he's not interested, they could be a place to land somebody. And in terms of the, like, Corey Joseph's deal, he could find 15 teams that he'd fit on, so you don't have to worry too much about that one. But for the big ones, and I'm basically naming these teams for both of them because, again, I don't really think that it has much to do with the player fit. I think these teams are saying, we'll take essentially your dead salary as long as you give us assets. And we don't really care what comes along with it.
Yeah, give us a young player or give us a pick or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. So, but, so I was just specifically Phoenix. Is that so? What other, whether you saw Phoenix, Brooklyn, are there any other teams where these players could go? Or
there are other teams. See if I can grab my list here.
Yeah, sure, sure. That's fair enough. I'm sorry to put you on the spot with that one.
Doesn't Miami have a lot of room?
Yeah, I think they're trying to still get Hayward.
Miami's trying to do stuff.
Yeah, that's the only difference.
Yeah.
Sacramento?
Sacramento's one.
Yeah.
Depending on what they think they're doing. I have no idea. They're talking to a bunch of free agents as though they're trying to put a team together.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, why are they talking to Vince?
It's cute.
They got to go through the motions. They were trying to get Iguodala, but yeah, it'd be interesting to see if they could get a team like Phoenix, who has so much cap space, if you could trade them, say, Valanciunas and Corey Joseph, which is a huge chunk of money, and then you could take back a Jared Dudley or take back... I was looking at Indiana earlier because obviously there had been talk of Corey Joseph going to Indiana until they signed Darren Collison. Now, maybe they want another guard, but that happened just before we started recording. You guys actually let me know that that happened. but I was looking at maybe taking back a guy like Thaddeus Young. But obviously those guys are making significant salary. I don't know how likely it is. I don't know. Maybe that's just asking too much. I think, you know, being able to move both guys to a team and get something decent back might be too tall an ask. Is that what do you guys think about that?
Russell? Moving...
No, go ahead, Dan.
I was just... both guys? Carroll and JV?
Yeah, like to the same team so that you can get cap space but also take back a smaller salary.
Yeah, I think more likely what would happen is if they move Joseph on his own, that essentially gets them down to about $7 million over the tax, give or take. Then you can move one of those $14, $15 million contracts and bring back a $7, $8 million contract in that deal, just as one of them moving.
I see.
Which is maybe a little more palatable if a team has somebody they don't want. But then again, in theory, then you're taking back a salary the team doesn't want.
Right.
Which is probably not what you want to spend that $7 or $8 million on. But let's say it was like a guy like Jared Dudley, who, assuming he can get healthy again.
Or maybe for a team that's closer to the tax and that shedding that extra little, like, not taking out as
cap,
much.
Yeah.
Not taking
out
as much salary.
They don't need the full $15 million in salary to absorb. So it does open up your options. But then again, you do have to find a specific salary on that team to fit. So I don't think it's a key that will open too many doors.
Yeah, fair enough. That's fair. I was dreaming big. I flew.
Chicago has a lot of cap space. So.
Yeah, see, that'd be another dream.
They had nobody on their team, so...
No. Do they have Robin Lopez still?
They guess we
don't. Yeah. You don't like Robin Lopez?
They do have Robin Lopez.
Yeah. Okay.
I wouldn't want Robin Lopez. Plus, he makes $14 million, so it doesn't
matter. So, yeah, it's too hard. That's the thing. I was looking at a guy like Thad Young. I was like, oh, Thad Young can't be making that much money.
Yes,
he's making almost $15 million next season.
This is the thing about these two contracts, right?
Yeah.
$15 million everybody makes now.
Yeah.
So they're not bad contracts in and of themselves. It's just... We have guys we want to pay a lot of money, so we have to pay everybody else almost nothing.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That's the problem.
Yeah, for sure. So, okay, let's assume, let's go into our time machine and assume that the Raptors can get to a place where they can use the mid-level exception, the full mid-level exception. Is there any guys specifically that are still available in free agency that you would like to see the Raptors target? Obviously a wing with
I've
PJ Tucker leaving. You have one? Hackett?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. CJ Miles.
Ah, it's my guy. There you go. That
That's why I wanted to jump in first, because I figured everybody would have CJ Miles.
Yeah.
Especially if they move Carroll. If they move Carroll, they're going to need a wing, and he's the most obvious name on the market, especially with the whole we're going to shoot a lot more threes thing.
Yeah, he shot 41% from three last year, has been above 38%, I think, for the last 5 years. So yeah, he's a lefty, which we don't have a lot of lefties, so that would be kind of cool. But, Miles is a guy, he plays, the two and the three. He's not a great defender, but he's not useless. And, you know, he's a guy who can give you minutes off the bench and, as you mentioned, shoot the three. So, yeah, he would definitely be an interesting one for me. Russell, what do you think about CJ Miles? And did you have anyone else in mind?
CJ Miles would be great. I'm sure that someone will pay him more than we can. Like, I'm sure he's probably going to get more than the mid-level. Although, I'm not sure, I guess, but I think he's worth more than it. I would say that the guy that I had in mind, even if we're depending on what level of mid-level we might have, I've always been one of the last guys that still believes in Ersan Ilyasova.
Yeah, you mentioned that last week.
So I'm kind of thinking of that. But then, of course, my dream would for it to be Vince Carter. So,
yes.
40-year-old Vince Carter, don't care, still plenty useful.
Yeah.
Especially if, like, he could be a veteran minimum guy, though, if worst case, if you got to, like, fill out the roster at the end.
Give him the biannual exception.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's a fourth version of the mid-level, by the way.
How does that one work?
You can only use every other year, hence the biannual exception.
And they have it. They didn't use it last year.
It's only like $2.5 million. No, they didn't use. They had cap space last year.
Right.
Initially, maybe not. No, they used the mid-level. I guess they just didn't use it.
But
they didn't use it last year.
Okay, cool. So I don't know. They've got one spot left to fill on the roster. If it's not Patrick Patterson, you're looking at guys kind of like in this zone that we're talking about right now. CJ Miles, I think, would be the top get. I still think I'd be okay with Ersan. Do you guys not agree with me on Ersan? Or?
I just don't like him. But it's all fantasy basketball-based. He gets hot for 2 weeks and then leaves me hanging out to dry. I think I mentioned this last week. But, I don't know. I think from a lot of things I've read about him is that he kind of checks out and but he's a shooter. I think, Russell, I see exactly where you're coming from. I'm not saying that you're...
Well, the culture reset field, and, wanting to shoot more threes. Yeah. Now, his percentage has dipped the last few years, but this is a guy that, you know, in 2015-16 shot over 40% from three, so he's not that far gone.
Yeah.
And he's only...
No, for sure.
Yeah. And, he's only 35-36%. He's been shooting 35-36% the last few years. That's not bad.
No, exactly. Yeah. Especially from a forward that, you know, you'd be getting on a valuable deal, like a low-value deal. The low value is not the word I'm saying. Low money deal.
Low risk. Yeah, for sure.
And the thing is, like, people have tried to jam him into starting roles most of his career. And he fit there, obviously, at some points, like in Milwaukee and things like that. But he's really been a journeyman as of late. But, if you're running him as a backup, like, there were moments where he looked okay as a backup for Atlanta and okay for a backup, okay even as a starter in Philly. So I don't know. I don't hate it. I think he's still got a little bit in him, especially because he has a skill set that we covet.
I think he fits. My concern is I think he'd end up starting because if you're going after Ilyasova, I think it's because you've moved Valanciunas, which means that Ibaka is starting at center.
Good point.
Yeah.
And you don't have – is Pascal Siakam your de facto starting power forward again? I don't think he is over Ilyasova.
Where do we stand on – that's a very good point. Where do we stand on Patterson? Do we want Patterson back?
Yeah.
I'd love him back.
I would, too.
Yeah. Especially given –
Yeah, we're all stats. We all like stats, though. So that's
that's part true. Of it.
The fact that Tucker's gone, I mean, I think they almost need him back. Not because he's irreplaceable or anything. It's just because there's a kind of a dearth of interesting guys who do what he does. He's a good defender who can shoot the three. Obviously, he's been pretty streaky with it. And if a casual fan who just watched the playoffs heard me say that, they'd be laughing. But 3-point shooter for a lot of his time tenure with the Raptors. He's been extremely streaky. And when he gets cold, which is crappy because then you can't always rely on him. But if you're looking at, I'm looking at the free agent forwards right now. There's not a lot of dudes that you'd want to use the mid-level on to replace them that are going to be available. I mean, I've heard people say Danilo Gallinari. He's going to get more than the mid-level.
Way more.
Oh, yeah.
Way more.
Exactly. Oh, totally, right? So that's what I'm saying. Like, if you're looking at guys like, would you rather have Jeff Green? No, thank you.
Nope.
Like, Tyreek Evans is out there. 35-year-old Zebo's out there, who I actually would like, but if they were going to keep Carroll. But, you know, there's other guys like Anthony Tolliver's out there, Aaron Baines, who's basically a center. I don't know why he's on this list. But anyway, there's just not a lot of guys who have the well-rounded game that Patterson has, which is why I think a lot of us assumed he was going to get a nice offer from somebody and be gone. But the interest hasn't been there, and a lot of teams that are looking to contend have kind of spent most of their cap space at this point.
You think he has
which is great for the Raptors.
Do you think he has... Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Do you think he has a foot in the door with the Raptors and he's like the... Masai's just kind of got him on the other line while he's trying to move a salary to...
Yeah.
I think it really depends on who they move. If you move Valanciunas, you need the front court filled in.
Yeah.
And then Patterson, I think, is back. I think if Valanciunas goes, Patterson's back. Simple as that.
Yeah.
Unless they have one of those salaries coming back in the Valanciunas deal, for example, like
yeah.
you were mentioning.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
But if they manage to actually dump Valanciunas' salary entirely, mm-hmm. I think Patterson's back, like, no questions asked.
Yeah, it would totally make sense.
But if they move Carroll, they need another wing.
Mm-hmm.
And Patterson doesn't help there.
No, you'd be looking at maybe using it, trying to get CJ Miles, or looking at guys like yeah. Omri Caspi.
Vince Carter. Vince Carter.
No. Not until he says sorry to me.
Personally.
Oh, get over it, Dan.
I will not. I will never. It's my only one person I hold a grudge against in the whole world. I don't hold grudges against anybody. Vince Carter broke my heart when I was 15 or 16 years old. And it was like a very impressionable time. And I wrote a whole article about it on the now defunct samepageteam.com.
R.I.P.
Called Screw Vince Carter. And I appreciate everything that he's done in his career and how he's become such a great role player and how it's so fun to watch him be athletic at 40. I can appreciate that objectively. But for him coming back here, until he like gets up and says, listen, everything that happened when I was leaving, obviously more has come out about it now. The team didn't treat him very well, and I can appreciate all that. But I dogged it for half a season, and you guys had to watch it, and the fans didn't deserve that, and I'm sorry to the fans. I'm not going to apologize to... He doesn't have to apologize to the team. He doesn't have to apologize to anyone else because they did treat him pretty shittily. But, you know, and I'm not going to defend Rob Babcock. Like, no, thank you. But we're not talking about... we're not talking about bringing back Rob Babcock either.
Okay.
If he can get up and say, listen, I shouldn't have done that. And he's basically, he said on things, oh, I wish it went differently, this and that and the other. But he's never accepted any kind of responsibility for it. And it still irks me. And I'm not going to let it go. I don't care who lets it go. I've heard everyone let it go, from the guys in the starters because they have to work with him now. Or, other Toronto sports fans. Everyone seems to let it go. I will not let it go. So that's my hill I'm going to die on.
I would love the redeem tour of it, though. And, like, I was thinking about it today. Once Lowry re-signed, I was thinking to myself, yeah, well, it's going to be interesting to see if they retire DeRozan and Lowry's jerseys at the end of this all. I know it's weird to be thinking that far ahead, but, like, they could legitimately – because I've always thought who will be the first one, and I really legitimately thought it would be Vince. But, of course, some people will – there will be lots of think pieces on – if Vince's jersey should be retired or not as a Raptor, but I still think that he is a big reason why We the North exists and why the basketball is as popular as it is in Canada now, and it all grew from him. And as much as I was mad at the same things that you talked about, Dan, at the end of the day, I'd like to see him redeem himself. And if he came back here and he signed for a good contract and he played with... like it filled that need. Like if the team were to trade Carroll and he filled that need on the wing, which he can still do very serviceably at 40 years old. We just saw him do it with Memphis. Mm-hmm. And he came back, let's say that in that initial presser, as they hand him back his jersey, he said those things that you want him to say, then would you be okay?
Absolutely. I'd be 100% on board. I love a narrative. I love a redemption story, but I need to hear that. I can't have him just come back and be like, hey, I'm back now. Wasn't all that funny 15 years ago? No, it wasn't funny. So anyway, I would completely be on board for that. I think he fits really well with the team. I think he would fill a need, as you said, Russell, and I think it would be fun. But I don't know. I'm really worried it's going to actually happen, and he's not going to say sorry, and I'm not going to know what to do. So
here's the thing. What you do is you wait until the first game he hits a game winner.
Yeah.
And then all those emotions will just go away.
Yeah, maybe. It's definitely, I'm probably that malleable. I'd be like, oh, look at this guy. NBA Live 2004. He was on the cover. Perfect. Anyway. But yeah, other guys. Okay, so enough Vince Carter talker. I'm going to get upset. So other guys you could look at. I mean, you want a guy who can shoot is the thing. So when I'm looking through this list, I'm trying to find guys who primarily can shoot, but there's a lot of like very one-note shooters like Anthony Morrow, or I don't know. I can't even think of it. Bojan Bogdanovic is available. Oh, he's an RFA, though. So Washington might bring him back. I don't know. There's as I said, there's just not a ton of dudes. So bringing back Patterson, who's still only 28, would really make a lot of sense if they can do it where they don't get hammered by the tax. So I think, Hackett, you made that really good point. Based on what they do with the moving at the salary, it would make sense to bring him back. But other wings, C.J. Miles or Omri Caspi, so it's pretty thin. Maybe, Barbosa, the guy who just got cut by Phoenix, is available.
You don't think he'll retire at this point?
He's only 34. Can you believe that?
Oh, wow.
That's surprising.
I thought he was 34 when he was on Toronto. But he's only 34, and apparently he still wants to play. The Golden State guys always talk about how he, is the only person who never gets tired. They have, a three-hour practice, and he's just, he's not even sweating.
So, we just gave P.J. Tucker another go-around in a Raptors uniform. I think it's time to It wouldn't be that bad to give Barbosa another go.
No, he'd be fun off the bench.
I say we split the mid-level between Vince Carter and Barbosa. Just do the full...
run it back.
Yeah.
Milt Palacio is available. Okay. okay, so that was a pretty good look, I think, at what the Raptors are going to be doing and what they have to do. Obviously, we have to wait for some shoes to drop to really kind of break everything down further. But we're pretty far into the show here, and I thought it would be fun to kind of take a look around the rest of the NBA. We've been kind of hinting at some of the deals that are happening and trends that are happening in free agency. I asked you guys to look and pick some of your favorite free agent signings so far. I have most of them here right in front of me. Hackett, I'll let you go first. Why don't you give me your favorite signing, your favorite non-Raptors signing so far in free agency?
My one favorite signing?
Well, I know you made three, but we'll go one at a time. We can go back and forth with you and Russell.
Okay. Well, I'm going to take the really obvious, awesome one that's going to be so fun, which is Paul Millsap.
Okay.
Darren, that was mine.
Well, no, that's okay.
This is what I'm saying. Everybody was going to have this one. When Dan texted me, I was like, well, there's one obvious one, and then we'll see what the other two are. That'll be the interesting part. Because, man, Paul Millsap in Denver. That's an incredible fit.
Yeah. Perfect. Right next to Jokic. Obviously, he plays defense, which is nice because Jokic is not a great defender as yet. He's going to be able to cover for him that way. He stretches the floor for them. He's a really nice fit. And they got him at, obviously, they paid him quite a bit of money, but... Was it 5 years, $90 million? Is that what it is? I think I have it.
It's 3 years, $90 million.
3 years, $90 million.
3 year term.
Yeah, so that's amazing because he's 32, right? And I think teams were worried about having to pay him into the twilight of his career, but that's the end of his prime essentially is what they bought, and to get a big big market free agent to go to Denver, that's kind of what you got to do. So that is a really really fun one. Russell, you said that was on your list as well.
It was at the top of mind because I've always been a huge Millsap fan. I really wanted him in Toronto. I'm happy with Ibaka as a consolation prize, and I apologize. I like Serge Ibaka a lot. I've always have, but Millsap has always been kind of my golden grail, holy grail, golden ticket, golden whatever.
Golden goose.
I don't know. I've always really wanted Paul Millsap on my team. Anyway, the point is, we can't have him. Because we just signed a power forward for over $20 million, so a year. It's funny because if you then said, okay, well, which team would be cool to see Millsap on if he can't be on the Raptors? I think the Nuggets would probably be the first team that I would mention, if not the second. Simply because I love the fit with Jokic. Jokic is such an amazing passer, and Millsap's a very good passer for a big as well. They can both shoot. And they've got such a young, interesting roster. It's like if that team develops, it could be an interesting... Millsap's obviously not going to be there for it, if they became a contender down the road. That would take a few years to get there. But if you're looking at getting into the timeline after Golden State's dominant run that we're surely to watch, especially with the contract that Durant took, allowing that type of thing to happen. It's fun to see teams where you can kind of project a few more years in the future and go hey, they could be kind of interesting when that winds down type thing, right? Because the interesting thing now in the NBA is it's the haves and everyone else, which is the Warriors, and everyone, the have-nots, which is everyone else. But of the have-nots, there's a big spread of teams where, you got some at the top that are really loading up and going for it and making these big moves and free agent signings, but still no one has really moved the needle to the point where you're okay, they're going to challenge the Warriors. But they're, you know, there are teams that are going for it, and you can't fault them for that. And then you have other teams that are kind of taking the long approach, and you know, the Nuggets making this deal now will make them very fun and interesting now. But having a guy like Millsap around can only be good for the other players as they, like, on their roster that they're trying to develop to be interesting a couple years down the road. So either way, they're going to be a fun league pass team, just because I love Millsap and I love Jokic. So I'm really excited about that signing.
Nice, yeah. So I love Millsap. He was on my list as well, so he knocked that out. My number one, though, on my list, someone was mentioned earlier, J.J. Redick. I love J.J. Redick going to Philly, but more importantly, I love the way he went to Philly on that one-year deal, $23 million. It's just such a when J.J. Redick became a free agent and Brian Colangelo had cap space, we talked a lot earlier about Jason Capono. I was like, oh, man, this is like destiny. There's no way that he's not going to wind up in Philly or at least be offered a monster contract. But this is actually, I think, a really, really smart move by Philly. They have their young guys are going to be playing together. You bring Redick in, who's a veteran, who's done it, who's been to the playoffs, you know, who was on those Magic teams. I think he was on the Magic team that went to the finals and has played on these Clippers teams for years and has obviously a lot of wisdom to share about how a locker room can work or not work. but he's just a really good player and a pro, a guy who works hard on his game. And there's no risk to the salary because if your team is good, he's there and he's going to be shooting out the lights hopefully for you and playing well. If your team is bad, that salary is very movable. As we said, $23 million isn't what it used to be. And on a one-year deal, there are teams that will take that on and maybe give you assets back for it if they want to add a guy like Redick. The way that, I mean, obviously it's a bigger salary, but the way that Cleveland added Kyle Korver last year, the way that teams are looking for a guy of Redick's ilk, the fact that that salary is going to be expiring is going to let Philly maybe add veterans or two veterans into that same kind of, if they have to match the salary. So I love that J.J. Redick signing. What did you guys think? Hackett, you want to go first?
Sure. It was, I mean, a lot of people are saying that Philly's going to be really good now, and I don't think they are.
No, I don't think so either, yeah. But I just, I like the use of
I don't think they make the playoffs.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? What team in the East? Like, health is obviously a big thing, but the way that the Atlanta, Chicago, the Pacers, like all these teams have gotten noticeably worse, like that bottom half of the playoff bracket, why couldn't Philly make that if they're healthy?
They could. But this is my, that's a big thing if they're healthy.
Yeah, I know.
But I don't know. Even when they were healthy last year, they weren't exactly lighting the league on fire.
They did have that little run there that they were interesting.
Interesting, yes. I guess, I don't know. I guess I just don't see them as really that. I think they have too many young players still.
Yeah, I agree.
As the big minute guys, where they're going to give back a lot of what they give you. Just on the other end.
I just think there are like four good teams in the East. And
yeah.
Oh, I agree. I agree there's a lot of bad teams now. Yeah. I just don't think they're at the top of that pile yet.
Okay, yeah, sure. Like if you look at the playoffs from last year, I think it's pretty safe to say the top four, the Celtics, Cavs, Raps, and Wizards will be there. And then the Bucks, I think, is safe to say they'll also be there. Oh, hopefully they do not sign Derrick Rose, but which has been rumored that they're meeting with him. But I think that would be a huge mistake. Why wouldn't they sign George Hill? That's the guy they should sign. But anyway, those five teams...
They can't, man. They can't.
They can't?
Why not?
Oh, they're up against the tax.
Oh, they are. So then how are they looking at Rose? Are they going to get him on a mid-level exception?
On an exception, some small exception or something.
Oh, weird. Okay, well, okay. Fair enough. But say those five teams are in. And as you mentioned, the Hawks, Pacers, Bulls probably drop out.
Probably.
I think the Heat get in for sure. So that's six. I think the Hornets will probably have a better year than they had last year.
Yeah, I like their offseason. Last year.
Yeah. So that's seven. That's seven playoff teams already, right? So the Sixers, I think, could fight for that eighth spot. But I don't think they're, you know, I mean, that bottom is going to be pretty nasty. A nasty quagmire. The Nets, the Magic, the Knicks, the Pistons. The Pistons, yeah, I guess Pistons you could see, they could get in there, yeah. But I could see Philly, if everything goes right, making a push for it. But again, I think it might be a year too early. But they could still have a successful season, which is why I think it's a good idea for them to bring in a guy like Redick and, to a lesser extent, Amir Johnson. Guys that can show them how to play and, you know, have a winning culture and all that nonsense that stats guys don't usually like. But I think and I'm a stats guy as well, but I think that stuff does matter when you're kind of trying to develop the young guys' habits as they grow.
For sure. I think it was a good move, and I think they'll be fun. I just, there's been some talk online about them now being a team to be worried about.
No, yeah.
That's anywhere close to true.
I agree. I agree. But would you like the signing, though? Yeah,
yeah, it's fine.
Okay. Well, what do you think, Russell?
It was second on my list for all the reasons you mentioned. I like that getting him on a one-year deal, the money doesn't really matter in the sense that they had the money to spend and, you know, what that contract can be used for, which you perfectly outlined. They desperately needed shooting, and they filled exactly that need. They filled a position that they didn't really have anything at. It was really just a flurry of perfection in terms of what they were looking for. So I think that, you know, there's one thing to say like, okay, someone's a good signing because you like the player and you like the team he's on. But like, given all the factors, I just think that that was a solid, solid signing. And I'll chunk Amir Johnson in with that too.
Yeah.
As a veteran big that they got on a, like, you know, for that same one year thing. So I think that that's, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Cause then they can sell if it doesn't work at the deadline, they can just sell things off.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to see that trend of, you know, shorter deals. There's been, I was looking at it here and via this website I'm using here, there's only been 3 full 5-year deals signed in free agency so far. Curry, Drew Holiday, and Blake Griffin, and no one else. And there's been a couple 4-year deals. Patty Mills got one. Trying to look here. There has not been one center signed in free agency yet, according to the positional eligibility on this website. But
didn't Nene sign?
Oh, he did. He did. They fixed that. They have him listed as a power forward on this thing. But yeah, they fixed that after Daryl Morey screwed up the cap, offered an illegal contract. But for sure, I think that it is interesting to see the teams trending towards these shorter deals to kind of maximize flexibility. They can do these short, high AAV deals and average annual value for the listener. And kind of maintain their flexibility, but still pay out the big cash. So, Russell, we stole your players. So, Daniel stole Millsap from you, and I stole Reddick from you. Who was third on your list? Did you have one?
Well, here's the thing. If we kind of talked about Tucker because he's a former Raptor now, but does he count as one, or do I have to pick someone else?
No, you can take him.
Yeah, you're stealing mine now.
Well, we're like-minded, so... Anyway, I love the Tucker fit in Houston. I think that the 4-year deal with him is nice. Good for him that he got it. You know, $8 million annual, average annual is good. I think he's worth that. I thought he would have been worth a bit more even, but for a 4-year deal, that's really good. He's a great fit there, as you know, especially where you've got Harden now and you can surround him with Tucker and Chris Paul in some lineups where you can really hide him on defense. You throw a Ariza in there too, and you can get some really good defensive lineups now. He's just a really great fit for them, and it was a good way for them to kind of reload, like to add pieces around the killer duo in Harden and Chris Paul. He was a really good value player for them. So I love that signing all around, and I'm really jealous because I wanted him back.
Yeah, I agree. I think I can see why he did it. I can see why he went. Yeah, I mean, they're a team that's so loaded, and it's going to be a lot of fun to play in Mike D'Antoni's system. And, you know, I'm sure he had guys in Phoenix. They weren't there together, but guys in Phoenix who knew D'Antoni, I'm sure that he could talk to, that he knows what it's going to be like to play for him. Apparently, he knows Chris Paul as well. And it's not surprising that he would go there and try to do that, given his age. But, yeah, it's kind of – I'll miss him. I mean, he's a real fun Raptor to have for the short time period that we had him. And I wish him all the best because he's just such a good dude. It's very rare that you see a guy who comes in and then leaves like that and there's just like zero ill will, but I don't think anyone bears him any kind of grudge. It's just, yeah, good for him for the road he took to get there and that he's going to try to, you know, it's going to be fun to try to see him try to stop Kawhi and try to stop Kevin Durant and whoever, Klay Thompson. And it'd be fun to see him up against the best every night.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got stuff to say about this PJ Tucker going to Houston thing.
Go for it.
A couple of things. So he didn't get the full mid-level exception.
Right.
He got $8 million a year. Full mid-level gets to be about $10 million a year.
Yeah.
And I think the reason for that is they've got this Zhu Qi draft pick. They're going to have to use an exception to sign him. And I think they're going to use a small chunk of their mid-level exception. And PJ Tucker got what's left. But on that note... I'll bet you Houston would really like to use the rest of that mid-level exception on somebody else if they could. And they got a whole pile of non-guaranteed salary sitting around that they could, in theory, trade to the Raptors to get PJ Tucker in a sign-in trade.
Right.
Right, I hadn't thought about that. I've thought about it before, but I hadn't thought about it during our conversation. That's still very much in play, isn't it?
Well, it's hard to say exactly what's in play, but I would think they'd be interested in that, just so that they can then go out and get another piece.
It works well for both sides, as far as I understand it.
Yeah, so the non-guaranteed contracts would come our way, and we would probably waive them all.
Right.
There'd be no salary hit. It wouldn't cost us anything. But in theory, what would also come our way is like a second-round pick or something.
Which we could then flip.
And make it worth our while. Which we could then help flip and help grease one of our other salary-shedding trades. Which would be real nice.
Yeah,
yeah, cool. Yeah. Yeah, interesting. And it's Houston traded their pick for Chris Paul, their first rounder, right? So
yeah.
Oh yeah, we can't get a first from them for sure.
But second,
I think they have a second next year. It's not their own, but it's like a one of three teams
rounders. Okay.
But anyway, I like Tucker going there. I think he's going to fit great there. It's a good signing.
Okay. All right. A quick game, guys. I'm going to count down 3-2-1, and when I do 3-2-1, we're all going to say our least favorite free agent signing.
Give me a second to think too. Yeah.
No, I haven't found another good one. Though.
Should be so easy.
I have another good one too.
Do you? I thought you did three already, Russell.
I did three already, but I had one in the chamber if I couldn't use Tucker.
Oh, okay.
I've only done two.
Well, I want to do the least favorite. So let's do that.
I'm going to have to think about it.
Okay. All right. Well, say your favorite.
Hackett,
go. Yeah, go ahead. You're the guest.
He's our guest. Yeah. Yeah.
But my other good one?
Yeah.
Jody Meeks.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
That was I found that strangely low. I know he's coming off some stuff, but
yeah,
$3.5 million for 2 years per year for 2 years in Washington. That's an astonishingly low contract for a shooter.
Yeah, the 2 year deal is kind of I wouldn't be surprised if he did that for a year to kind of get his value back up. But
yeah,
I guess maybe he thinks he's really hurt and was like, I'll take two years. That's fine.
That must be because I would have thought he'd have somebody would throw the tax pyramid level at him or something.
Sure. Yeah.
Give him $5 million a year for something just to. That's a pure shooter in this league.
Yep.
Anyway, I thought that was a great job by Washington to get him. It's like a high reward, low risk.
Yeah, their history of signing bench players, not so good. So hopefully that one. Well, actually, I don't know. They're not our conference, so maybe it doesn't. I don't want it to work out for them, but I don't wish Jody. I don't wish any ill will towards Jody Meeks. Certainly, I hope he's healthy and just misses all.
Okay, I have my bad one.
You have your bad one. Have you thought of one, Russell?
Yeah, I got one.
Okay, so I'm going to do 3-2-1, and we're all going to say the player's first and last name. Okay?
Okay.
3-2-1.
Drew Holiday.
Oh, a difference. Jeff Teague.
Two Jeff Teagues and a Drew Holiday. Okay, Russell, why is Drew Holiday your worst signing?
I think just the state of the team that he's on and the fact that they're committing to that core. A non-playoff team with, like, and for 5 years is a long time for a guy with a pretty checkered injury history.
Yes.
I love Drew Holiday a lot, but paying him for that many years at that salary, I'm not super thrilled about it, and I wouldn't be thrilled about it if I were a Pelicans fan. Like, if he were getting more of, like, a short deal like we've been seeing go out, but, like, yeah, I'm not a big fan of that deal just because of what it locks them into. And I actually kind of like the Jeff Teague deal just simply because I like Jeff Teague more than most people. But why do you guys hate Jeff Teague?
Hackett, you go first. Well, Hackett, you say what you thought about Holiday and why you hate Jeff Teague. Go ahead.
I don't hate Jeff Teague.
I know, sorry. Hate the Jeff Teague contract. Jeff Teague. Yeah.
I don't even really hate the Jeff Teague contract. I just
there haven't been that many bad ones, to be fair. Like,
There haven't been that many bad ones, and there haven't been that many good ones. I struggled with three good ones.
Yeah.
Like, if I was going to make a totally open top three list, I'm pretty sure I would have had Lowry and Ibaka as two of my top three.
Fair. Yeah. Me too.
Because they're such common sense signings, and a lot of these are just like setting aside Kevin Durant because that's
I'm kind of ignoring the ones where people went to their stayed with their same team too.
That's fair. But so, looking for a bad one, I mean, I don't know. Jeff Teague. Jeff Teague's just I don't know. He's a mediocre point guard in my eyes.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. I think that Minnesota. I still don't know why they were so adamant on getting rid of Ricky Rubio, but that's the problem I have with it. But I think Jeff Teague's perfectly serviceable, and if you've got a team with all these like stars and growing stars on it, I'm totally respect them for loading up and being like, okay, enough of this not making the playoff nonsense playoffs nonsense. Let's do it. And like Teague put you in that position. He's a good point guard. I'm not saying he's great. I'm not saying he's, but he can distribute. He can score a bit. I think he's perfectly fine for what they needed. And given the landscape, I think I would have liked maybe a guy like George Hill a little better. I'm a big George Hill fan.
Yeah.
But
yes.
They essentially chose Taj Gibson, right? They got Gibson and Teague instead of Hill, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know if I agree with that direction.
But I mean, at the end of the day, like, who are they getting? Yeah. Like, if they're not getting Lowry, which obviously they weren't, and if.
You say obviously, but that was a thing.
Yeah, it was a thing, but
that
I mean,
was a discussion point.
No, I know, but I mean, I don't know if there were there any sourced reports on that necessarily that Lowry had any interest. He didn't have a meeting with them or anything, right? So
no, just they had a point guard vacancy,
and they wanted him.
He had a meeting with anybody?
No,
exactly. Did he have any?
No, he didn't. No. As far as I know. So, like, the thing is, everyone with cap space and a point guard need wanted him. So, you know, I don't put much weight into that. And given who was available. I think it was perfectly fine because they did it, like, after trading Rubio, they did need a point guard, obviously. So,
I'm letting my Rubio problem splash back on.
For me, it's that I don't think Teague is better than Rubio. I guess he does different things. He can shoot for a while.
Yeah, they're vastly different players.
Yeah, so I don't understand that in terms of just a pure upgrade sense. I do understand it in terms of a fit. You mentioned George Hill. I think if you're going to spend that money. I mean, George Hill right now is looking at, I guess you couldn't have, it's like Kendrys Morales to the Jays. You couldn't predict how free agency was going to play out, but George Hill is still sitting out there. And if you could have gotten him for the same money, I don't think, I personally would take Hill over Teague 10 times out of 10.
Yeah, me too.
In terms of just paying him that money. I think it's just a lot of money, and they did it so fast. It seemed like you didn't need to pay Jeff Teague that quickly, given that the market for point guards is pretty dry. Like, there's a lot of point guards in the NBA right now. There wasn't a ton of teams out there looking, I don't think, to steal Jeff Teague away from you.
No.
That was more what it was for me, that they just did it so quickly, and they didn't, you know, look for a guy like George Hill. There's other guys out there, too, if that didn't pan out, you could have looked to a backup option. I don't know. It was just weird to me. The signing was weird. It's not that it's terrible. It's just that it was strange.
I think it's just, like, it's a good sign of...
Say that...
Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry. We say that Lowry wasn't interested, but we don't know, because they did move really fast. I mean, if they sat for a while, who knows? Like, when Lowry signed with the Raptors, he basically had no leverage.
Yes.
But if Minnesota's sitting there saying, hey, come over here, we'll give you 5 years.
But he wrote that Players Tribune thing, and it seemed like he, you know, that probably took some time. And what's he going to do, release an article that's like, we the further north? Or
we the technically further north.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just, okay. So you guys are laughing. I can hear the laughter. It's hard to tell. We're all on a phone call here. But anyway, I don't know. It was just weird. It just smelled funny to me, but that's fair enough. Who was your last one you had, Russell, in the chamber of PJ Tucker?
Funny enough.
If you couldn't use PJ Tucker.
Funny enough, Teague.
It was Jeff Teague. Okay.
given the circumstances of them, if they're getting rid of Rubio, I think that they got the best available point guard to replace him. Like, I still think they should have kept Rubio, but if they insisted on doing that and they went ahead and did it, then, like, you know, they came out of it the best they could.
Yeah, fair enough. I guess, too, like, to Hackett's point that they chose getting Gibson and Teague over getting George Hill. I think if you could get George Hill and then go get, like, Taj Gibson's fine, but you could go get someone else who could do what he's going to do. But maybe Tom Thibodeau just loves Taj Gibson, which
he sure does.
That is what it is. Chicago North.
They could have very well ended. Keep in mind, they could have very well ended up with, like, Derrick Rose because of Thibodeau, right? So I think if anything, I saw the signing of Teague and I was like, hey, that's not Derrick Rose. I like that.
Yeah,
those are some.
Fair,
that's a good lens to look at it through.
Yeah, fair enough. So we're coming to the end here. Last time when I was here, you guys had a great talk about the falling down story. We don't have that much time. Daniel, you told this hilarious story about a Halloween where, if I'm correct, you wore your father's motorcycle helmet.
Yeah.
And then you walked into a lamppost, which you called a light pole, which is fantastic.
I sure did.
Because it's a pole with a light on it. So
exactly.
It follows. I wanted to tell, it's one of my favorite stories.
So famous. Infamous even.
Yeah. From when I was a kid. And it's something that I have to, like, stop myself from doing when I'm a teacher. So when I was a kid, if I was ever doing anything, if I was ever hurt, or if I was ever doing something I shouldn't be doing, my grandfather would like jokingly threaten me with like violence, but I didn't get at the time that it was not something that would be appropriate to say to others. Now, I'll give you an example because that sounds really creepy as I put it. Using a light pole, when I was growing up, there was a lamppost on my front lawn, and I was playing ball hockey, and it was getting dark, and I was like maybe 6 or 7, and I didn't want to come in, and my mom tried to get me to come in, and I wouldn't. I was saying, no, I was doing like a rebellious phase or whatever. My dad tried to get me to come in. My grandmother tried to get me to come in. And then eventually I wound up holding onto this pole and I wouldn't let go. And I literally, like, they were trying to pull me by the ankles and I was holding onto this pole and I wouldn't come in and go to bed. And my grandfather came and he looked at me and he looked me in the eye and he looked at my arms and he poked them where I was hugging the pole and he goes, "All right, well, I guess I'll just get the axe then." And I didn't know if Sweet he was Jesus. Talking about chopping the pole down or chopping my arms off. But I just thought it was the funniest thing. And obviously it could have gone really wrong, but I just started laughing. And I was laughing so hard that I was just rolling around on the grass. And I then went inside without further resistance, as the story goes. I don't really remember that well. He used to tell the story. But he used to say every time if I banged my elbow or like tripped and skinned my knee, I'd be like, "Oh, I hurt my knee." He'd be like, "Oh, yeah, I guess we'll just cut it off." And I'd be like, "What?"
I have a lot of sympathy for your grandfather in this instance, because if you heard early on in this episode, the listeners heard a child screaming in the background in the early going. That was my 2.5-year-old who refuses to go to bed. And there are nights where I would definitely like to. I'm going to get child services called on me if I finish that sentence. But I love my child, and I would never do anything. But to even say those words, I'm like, okay, I kind of get that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the thing is when the injury thing, when he says, "Should we cut it off?" He wasn't saying, "Should we actually cut off your arm or your leg?"
Yeah.
He was saying, "Are you that hurt?"
Yeah, exactly.
"Are you really that hurt? Like, do we need to amputate?" "No? Okay, then go about your day." He was kind of an old school gentleman. So, but he'd be smiling as he said it either. It sounds menacing when I actually say it this way without you guys knowing who he is. But, yeah, anyway, that was my light pole story. And when you told your story about running into the pole, it made me think of that, as any story about a lamppost always does. So, did you think of another falling down story, Hackett? I don't want to put you on the spot.
Oh, it's not hard. I've got a lot of them.
Okay, sure. Hit us with one.
All right. I'll grab one from my glorious adult days. I lived up in Montreal for a couple of years.
Okay.
Where Russell is.
Yeah.
But I moved back to southwestern Ontario, Cambridge, a few years ago. And when I first moved back, we hadn't found a place to live yet. So we were living with my parents in the house that I grew up in. So yeah. This is a house I'm intimately familiar with.
Sure.
And one day I was just walking down the stairs with the phone in my hand talking to my dad and just fell down the stairs. For absolutely no reason.
Oh, no.
Now, these are stairs that I had gone up and down probably literally thousands of times in my life.
Yep.
So, a little bit embarrassing. But anyway, I land on my tailbone. Breath gets knocked right out of me. I'm rolling around on the ground in pain. And so my wife comes down and sees that I'm rolling around in pain and sort of just bends over, picks up the phone. "He's going to have to call you back." Stands up. But, so, lots of pity for me and my household.
That's a good one. Russell, any falling down the stairs stories quickly?
It made me think of one that's almost exactly like that in my current house. There's above the steps, like I'm a tall guy, I'm 6'3", and like coming down the steps, there's the floor above is a little bit on the low end, so I always have to duck down or limbo the last step or two. And one time I was carrying something down and I was kind of doing it in a rush and I wasn't paying attention to the, I never leaned forward or limboed and instead smacked my face off the top of the steps and then went, tits up and, landed on my tailbone. And,
Oh man.
So I've had
that reminds me of a time when I was at my childhood home after I had graduated from university. I had a crappy job that I didn't really enjoy. And, I was making enough money, but I was living at home, so I wasn't paying rent, and I was drinking a fair amount with my friends, as early, young 20-year-olds do, and I went out one night and I woke up and I was on the couch downstairs instead of in my bed, which is it was one of those nights which don't happen very often. But I definitely was like, why am I sleeping on the couch? And my mom came downstairs and was just like, when you came in last night, I heard a huge crash. And like at that moment, the lights came back on and I was like, oh yeah, when I got home, I slipped and fell down the stairs. I was carrying, I think I barbecued 2 hamburgers for myself. And was walking and balancing down this, again, childhood stairs that I've known, done 1,000 times. And there's only about, it was a short stairway because it was kind of like an L thing, but it was still like probably 8 steps. And I went down every single one of them on my tailbone. But all, I didn't say any of that to my mom. All I said to my mom was, she was like, there was a huge crash when you came in. What was that? And I said, oh, that's why my ass hurts. And she just looked at me and was like, you're moving. She didn't say it, but her eyes said it all. They were like, you're moving out. And like, I've had enough of this. This, you know, sleeping till noon, you drunk idiot. But I went down. I went down real hard. And I had a bruise on my butt. So, classic falling down the stairs stories. Well, that's it. We're just about out of time. So, Hackett, thank you so much for coming on and explaining the intricacies of the cap to us. We'd love to have, yeah, of course. Yeah, we'd love to have you back sometime in the future. Maybe once all these pennies drop and we can kind of chart the future. You could be our first 3-time guest too. Does that sound good?
Works for me.
You can't say no. we're recording this. Russell, can you tell the people where they could find us?
Absolutely. On Twitter at WeTheRapsCast. If you go to facebook.com/WeTheRapsCast, you'll find us there. And if you want to send us any kind of feedback or, you know, get to us for any of our mailbag type stuff that we do from time to time, you can write us at WeTheRapsCast@gmail.com.
Awesome. Well, for Daniel Hackett, Daniel, can you tell the people where they can read you and where they could get you on Twitter, actually?
Sure. I write at Raptors HQ, and on Twitter, I'm dhackett1565.
Okay, perfect. I am at SlammaDannyG on Twitter. My name is Dan Grant.
And I am Russell Pedal at Rusty Pedal Bike on Twitter.
And you can get up the salami and cheese, mama, because this podcast is over. Whoa, whoa.